Coach, you come in today 3-0 heading out to practice. How are you feeling about your team at this point?
Well, it's good to be definitely good to be 3-0. You know, I thought our team played competitively yesterday in all three phases of the game. I thought we improved. And so hopefully we can continue to do that. You know, work hard in practice, correct our mistakes, reinforce the things that we're doing well and continue to do those well, improve our fundamentals, improve our overall situation play, and just keep getting better on a daily and then a weekly basis. So that's our goal. Hopefully we can do that this week against Atlanta as well.
We take a lot of phone calls on the offense, and people are fascinated with the Patriots offense, what it does, what it's capable of doing, what it doesn't do well. Are you disappointed in the offense so far?
Well, I think there's room for improvement in all three phases of the game, offense, defense, and special teams. So, yeah, there's definitely things that we can work on in every part of our game, individually and collectively. So we'll continue to work on those. Sure.
How important is balance to that offense, a run pass? Is that something that's important to you?
Well, it's important scoring points. So there have been games where we've run the ball a lot. There have been games where we've passed the ball a lot. There have been games where we've been balanced. But I think the important thing is to be able to score points. So if you're scoring points, then I think we're happy. If we're not scoring points, then I don't think balance is that important or not important.
Is there anything to be said for, beyond scoring points, holding on to the ball, giving your defense a rest, some of the other things that an offense can do without specifically putting points on the board?
Well, I mean, look, everything's important. I'm not saying that, but, I mean, in the end, just like what happened to Tampa yesterday, I mean, the first quarter they had the ball for, I don't know, like 25 plays in the first two drives or whatever it was and had 3 points. So, I don't know, you tell me. How important is it to hold on to the ball? It's important to score. That's what's really important. So that's our goal on offense. Every time we send them out there, unless it's the last drive of the game where we're trying to eat up the clock or something like that, every other time we send them out there, the only reason they go out there is to score. They're not out there for any other reason. So
if that's the case, then your scoring is down about 10 points a game or so from where it has been the last couple of years. To go back to Michael's question, I would think that that would lead to some level of disappointment.
Well, our job is to try to score out there every time we get it, so, and not turn the ball over. So that's what we're trying to do. That'll never change. I can't imagine that would ever change. So that's our objective.
We talked about improvement on in all phases of the game. How about the offense? Where specifically did you see the offense improve from week two to week three?
Well, I thought our overall consistency of running the ball was better, and certainly our third down conversions, and we got the ball in the right area in the first half. So start with a couple of those things.
I wanted to ask you this before. We talked about Tampa coming into the game. They're 0-2. And during your press conferences last week, you really had great things to say about the Buccaneers. Are you ever afraid of your players listening to the noise from people like us who look at Tampa and say, oh, that's a game that the Patriots should win? They're at home. The Bucs seem to be in disarray. They're 0-2. They should win that game. Are you afraid of your players listening to that kind of stuff?
Well, I mean, look, there's a lot of people talking about a lot of things outside of our building, but what we try to tell them as the head coach and as the coaching staff, we try to tell them what the real situation is, what we need to do, how we can win, what we need to do to win, and how we're going to go about it. So that's really all we can control. I mean, I don't know what everybody else does or doesn't have to say, but I know that what we say is what we feel like is in the best interest of the team. And anybody that watched the first two Tampa games knows that that team was within two plays of being 2-0 instead of 0-2. So I don't know what other game they could have been watching, but that's the truth. There was any one of a number of plays in either one of those games against the Jets or the Saints that would enable them to win and be 2-0. So yeah. That's the truth.
I get the sense that if you name the team, if it's like the worst team in the NFL, no matter what the circumstances are, I get the sense that you would find a way to say something good about that team or to think what that team does well. Is it simply you're preparing for that team's best, even if that team hasn't shown it?
You always prepare for your opponent's best. I mean, what else would you prepare for? Do you think they're going to come in here and turn the ball over 8 times? I mean, you don't prepare for that. You prepare for a team to come in here and play their best football against you. And how are you going to play your best football against them? That's a competition every week. We can't control how they play, but we expect them to play well, and we're going to prepare for them to play well. And that's what our game plan is going to be based on, is the things that they do well and what we've seen them do well.
You expect them to play well, even, I'm not saying this is the case of the Bucs, but some teams haven't played well, but you still expect it when you play.
Of course. Why would you think they wouldn't?
Because they haven't, if they haven't done it.
So what? That doesn't mean anything. I mean, whatever they've done, well, they've done something. I mean, they've done something, things that they've done well. It doesn't mean that, you know, this week they can't do a lot of things well. They've shown that they've done things in spurts or in one phase of the game or another. I mean, I thought they would be irresponsible to coach a team and tell them, okay, fellas, the team is coming in here. It's not going to play well, so we should expect them to play a bad game. So, you know, why don't we play one that's just a little bit better than their bad game? I think I'd be totally irresponsible. I can't imagine any coach ever doing that.
Is that a lesson?
I mean, I couldn't imagine that. So, I mean, I don't really know what – I wouldn't know how to prepare a team the way you're talking about. I couldn't even fathom that.
Is that a lesson you learned the hard way? Is that something you learned early in your career or from a coach, somebody that you worked under? Or is it just something you've always believed?
Yeah, I couldn't see it any other way. I mean, how could you coach a team like that? I mean, I don't even know how. Like, you explain to me, like, how do you coach a team like that? I mean, I don't know what you're talking about.
What do you think of Tom Brady?
Maybe you can help me out. I mean, really. How do you coach him like that? You tell me.
Well, coach a team to say, you know, this team is going to fall apart?
You tell me what you're going to tell them.
If you're playing a bad team, I mean, it's tough to say this team is capable of doing X, Y, Z when the team is, say, let's say you're playing a
when we were 12-1 went down to Miami and they were 1-12 or whatever it was, and they beat us Monday night in 0-4. Is that what you're talking about? Like it could never happen. What game are we talking about here? I don't understand it. I think that's the most irresponsible thing I've ever heard of. I can't even fathom it.
Come back to this season. What have you thought of Brady's play so far through the first three games?
I think as a total football team, there's room for us to improve in every area, each individual, every unit, and I'm saying offensive, defensive, and special teams unit, but also the groups within the groups, the offensive line, the skill players, the front seven, the back end pass coverage, our punt team, our punt return team. I mean, there's room for improvement everywhere, and each individual can improve. So I put every player in that category. I put every coach in that category, me included. I mean, there's certainly things that I need to do better. You know, that's our goal every week, each of us, to get better individually, to get better collectively. And as a team, our offense, defense, and special teams have to complement each other. I thought we did a better job of that yesterday, but there's still room for improvement there, too.
Reports this week that you guys have reached a deal with Rob Ninkovich on a contract extension. When I first came back to town, Michael, he was a player that you pointed out to me and said, you're going to have a lot of fun watching him. He's an underrated guy, and every time the Pats come up with a big play, you said, there's a decent chance that he's going to be around it. How important was it to you to keep him in the fold long term?
Two sides agree on a contract, then that's what you have. So that was the situation here. The Patriots and Rob and his representatives were able to agree on a contract, and so that's what we have. And I'm glad he's here. Rob's done a good job for us. He's played on all four downs. Been a good special teams player, played defensive end, outside linebacker, multiple different responsibilities in the kicking game and on defense, and he's been very productive for us.
With a player like that who isn't a high draft pick, does he do something to catch your eye? Was there something Rob Ninkovich did early in his career here that caught your eye and gave you a sense that maybe he was somebody that was going to develop into a starter or maybe something beyond that?
Rob's earned everything he's gotten here every step of the way. So, you know, he came in before training camp, wasn't here in the spring, earned a spot on the roster, played in the kicking game, earned playing time on defense, was productive when he had an opportunity to play, earned more playing time on defense, started linebacker, started defensive end. Everything he's gotten here, he's earned, just like everybody else. There was nothing that was, he wasn't entitled to anything, wasn't handed anything. He earned what he got through hard work and performance.
He certainly wasn't handled anything. One of my favorite players to watch. I was thinking about Ninkovic, though. You guys have done a good job with lower drafted players, whether it's Ninkovic, Brady is the obvious one, Edelman, Givens.
We didn't draft Ninkovic.
Well, I'm saying, but or finding those guys or acquiring those guys, and you know, but even, right. Let's say drafted guys or fifth to seventh round types. You've had some success with those players, whether you drafted them or not. But then on the flip side, there's some guys who've drafted high, haven't worked out. We always hear that the draft is an inexact science. When you look at these guys who weren't drafted that high, is there anything that they have in common that you see that maybe makes the draft less of an inexact science? I mean, you can look at it and say, well, wait a minute. That guy was drafted in the sixth round. Now that I see this, this, and this, I can see if I see this a player like this down the road, I understand that, you know, maybe he has more value than the rest of the league sees.
Well, clearly, I mean, I think with a lot of those players, that probably the biggest thing you've seen from the majority of that group, I would say, is improvement. That the player that you're taking in whatever round it is or not drafted, and what that player, how much he improves and develops and what he becomes, is not what he was when you drafted him. Whether that's, you know, pick a name, you could... Julian Edelman didn't even play the position that he's playing.
Matt Castle.
Yep, yeah. You know, Tom Brady. I mean, those guys weren't... Tom Brady was the fourth-string quarterback here in 2000. So, I mean, how good was that?
Is it hard to see that? Is that part of the problem? When you're talking about measurables of a player, height, weight, speed, and you have the interviews, is it just hard to project what a guy will bring to the table, how much he'll improve? I mean, is that hard to scout?
Well, it's a very inexact science. I mean, to project where a person's going to be in a system that they haven't been in, you know, it's one thing to, you know, after a guy's freshman year in college, to say, well, how much he's going to improve in this system in 3 years. But in the National Football League, you're looking at a guy, it's like taking a guy out of high school, you know, you're looking at a guy who hasn't been in your system. And then how's he going to perform and how much is he going to improve in your system, in your program? I mean, that's a huge unknown. I mean, you try to anticipate it, but you don't. I mean, it's a very inexact science. So I think that's one of the real misnomers in the National Football League, is what guys are as rookies, what guys are in their second and third year, that there's a lot of times a great change in what they become from what they are, one way or the other. It's not always in a positive direction, unfortunately. And that's, you know, that's hard to gauge.
You think that science is getting more exact or less exact with time, or just the same?
I mean, I think if you look at every team in the league, you can find plenty of all those examples. Players that were taken, you know, with high expectations that didn't work out, players that were taken with lower expectations that worked out better than some of the guys with the high expectations. And I think you see that probably in every college program. You know, big recruits that go on to be All-Americans, big recruits that never see the field. Guys that are walk-ons that are low recruits that end up being star players that develop, and vice versa. So, I don't know. Obviously, where everybody's trying to find the key to unlock that door, we look at it very closely all year round, but certainly on an annual basis as it leads into the draft, try to find the common thread, try to figure out what the right thing is and avoid the mistakes and the guys that don't work out. But, you know, I still think you see that in every team and every, you know, you take any drafting record of anybody you want to put out there, and, you know, we've all been right and we've all been wrong, and just want to try to get as many right as you can. But nobody's bat 1,000 on that.
There's a report out there, and we didn't talk to you about this last week, shame on us, a report that you extended your contract with the Patriots. Is that an accurate report?
I don't talk about my contract.
Is it safe to say you're going to be here for a little bit?
I don't talk about my contract.
I was listening to you talk there a moment ago about getting it right. number two overall pick in the draft when you were a young coach with the Giants was Lawrence Taylor. I got to watch him as a kid. My favorite player to watch as a kid was watching the documentary on him over the weekend. I think it came out Thursday night or so, called The Life and Times of LT. You go back to those early years with him. There's a quote in there from you talking about how it took him, that there was an idea that maybe he wasn't going to be out on the field right away, and he certainly played his way into that. What were some of your early perceptions of him when you first saw him?
Well, Lawrence, came from Williamsburg, Virginia. Very humble, relatively small town guy. Went to North Carolina, and then was the second pick of the draft. Came to the New York Giants. Can't get a bigger city, a bigger stage, a bigger spotlight, and so that was quite an adjustment for him. But he, was a tremendous football player. Went to North Carolina as a nose guard, moved him to defensive end, and then he played outside linebacker for the Giants for us in a 3-4 defense. Although, we ended up rushing him most of the time, but he was a special talent. When he came in 1981. Coach Parcells was the head coach. Was the defensive coordinator, and I was and I coached the outside linebackers under Bill, and so worked with Lawrence. And amongst other things, of course, his physical play, his pass rushing skill, and his instinctiveness as a player. I was also the special teams coach, so we had him as the gunner on the punt team, which he was beyond unblockable. He was on the kickoff return team as a center and kind of as a kickout blocker, which he had some devastating hits on that. He rushed on the punt return team off the edge, which he was pretty hard to block there, just as you would imagine trying to block him on pass rush. He was the safety on kickoff coverage. So last line of defense kind of guy. And so he was fast. He was physical. He was very powerful. He had good weight room strength, but he had just explosive playing strength that was rare.
Did you know he changed the game? I mean, did you know that within a couple of years? I mean,
he was unblockable. He was unblockable, and the thing that's to me separated Lawrence from a lot of other great players was just his instinctiveness. He knew how to play football. He knew what was going to happen. He could tell by the way guys were looking at him whether they were going to block him or not block him. He could tell whether they were running at him or running away from him just by their look in their eye. He could tell when the quarterback was throwing because the quarterback was looking at him in the pass rush and it was a running play. A lot of quarterbacks didn't care about him because they didn't have the ball and they weren't worried about him. But when they were throwing the ball, he saw a different look from him. He just, and a lot of times he didn't even know what he saw, but he knew what he saw, like he just knew it. I don't know if he could explain it or could really tell you exactly what it was that triggered it, but he just knew it. And so some of the instinctive plays that he made that you just can't coach were just remarkable. And he started doing it early. So he's a really special, special player. Best player I've ever coached. Not an easy player to coach, but the best one.
Well, it seems
now, when people say, like Mike did, when people say that he changed the game, what does that mean? Do you agree with that? And if you do agree with it, a concrete example of how Lawrence Taylor made football change.
Well, prior to, I'd say, the middle of the 1981 season, offenses would put backs and tight ends on linebackers. That's what the pass protections were. And against the Eagles, when they had their halfback blocking Taylor, he had three sacks running over those guys. And then people started putting deep offensive linemen on him. They'd fan the tackles out to take him and treat him like a defensive end, even though he was standing up as a linebacker. And then San Francisco started pulling their guard out to take him. So it got to the point by the end of his rookie year that nobody would put a back on him. Not without, the back and another guy might take him, a back and a lineman, but there was always a lineman that was assigned to block him in pass protection. No tight ends, no backs. That changed that. So that was a big change even within the course of that season. And so I think, when you say change the game, I'd say that offensively when you snapped the ball, you had to know where Lawrence Taylor was and how you were going to deal with him. I mean, if you were going to run away from him, you had to find some way to slow him down because he could make the play from the backside with his, you know, 4-5 speed. And if you were going to run at him, then you had to find a way to block him because he was a hard guy to block. And in pass rush, you had to have a guy that was strong enough to handle his power rush, which was very good, and quick enough to handle his speed and change of direction. And like I said, you better know where he was or he's a guy that could ruin a game. And that's, you know, from that standpoint, I'd say he was a guy that, as much as anybody in the league over the course of the time that he played, was 100% game plan for.
It's time now, Bill, for the coach's question of the week, brought to you by your local Mercedes-Benz dealers. I know you thought you'd get out of here without this question, but we got it. See them for the limited time Mercedes-Benz certified pre-owned event on the web at mbusa.com. This week's question comes from Ann. Ann lives in Hyannisport. She says, I saw your sons on the sideline yesterday. What's it like to have a working relationship with your kids?
It's great. Yeah, it's great. You know, Stephen, my oldest son, is up in the press box during the game, and Brian, my younger son, was on the field. So, but maybe in pregame they were both down there.
Yeah, I think Fox showed a picture of them during the game.
Yeah,
you know, hugging okay. or whatever, doing yeah. a brotherly thing. What you want to see brothers doing? I'm yeah, sure they had go. Many moments yeah. when they were kids when they didn't always.
It
see
didn't
things
look like that.
Eye.
You're yeah. right. No, you're right. No, it's great, you know, and Steven was, you know, away for 6 years, 1 year in prep school, and 5 years in college at Rutgers. So during that period of time between their, you know, summer workouts and, you know, fall and spring and, you know, hardly saw him at all. And now to be able to work with him on a daily basis is, it's great. And, you know, Brian's, you know, as he's gotten older, has been able to, you know, do things in training camp, but, you know, chart plays and stuff on the offense. You know, we only have two quarterbacks, and so, you know, as a guy that can help out, and so that our backup quarterback, who's, you know, our second quarterback, who's going to, you know, one play away from having to play, that, you know, he can do some things like that and help out. That's great, and, you know, obviously it's good to have, you know, to be able to work with your kids on a regular basis.
You feel like you're harder on them than other coaches because, I mean, they're your kids, and are you holding them to a higher standard?
I don't know. That's a tough one. I don't know if the other coaches would agree with that or not. I'm not sure.
It doesn't seem like you hold guys to a high standard to begin with, so maybe that would be.
Right, there you go.
Hey, Coach, we really appreciate it. We'll do this again next Monday.
All right, sounds good. Thanks.